Hi, you're listening to Go See a Show, the Off-Off-Broadway podcast. Composer and electronic music pioneer Raymond Scott may not be a household name, but it's a pretty safe bet to say his music was heard in just about every American household in the mid-20th century. You, dear listener, have probably heard it as well, though you might not have realized it. Sinking Ship Productions explores the life and work of Scott in their play Powerhouse, named for one of his most iconic compositions, that one you're hearing right now. Playwright Josh Luxenberg, director John Levin, and actors Eric Lochtefeld and Eric Wright joined me after a recent performance to talk about their show. Take a listen.
I like to start with everybody's name on the mic, so we'll start to my left.
I'm Josh Luxenberg. I'm the writer.
I'm Eric Wright. I'm in the ensemble.
I'm John Levin. I'm the director.
I'm Eric Lochtefeld. I play Raymond Scott.
In the show Powerhouse, Sinking Ship Productions or Theater Company?
Sinking Ship Productions.
Excellent. Great. I'm getting it right. And we're at the New Ohio, and the show is, as Eric is playing the character of Raymond Scott. You might not recognize that name, but I didn't, but I certainly recognize so much of the music, which was pretty fabulous thing to realize. I was like, how do I not know who this guy is? Well, it turns out I did. I just didn't realize it. Why Raymond Scott? Where'd that come from you guys? Like, what was the inspiration to get started on a piece about this really, really pioneering composer?
This is John. I happened to be humming a bar of Powerhouse with one of my friends, and he said, "Do you know who wrote that song?" And I said, "No, I don't." And he said, "Well, it was written by this guy named Raymond Scott." And he wrote it to kind of reinvent and make this new, faster, zanier version of swing music. And then it ended up getting used in all of these Looney Tunes cartoons, and he really had no idea that any of that was going on. And so there's something really compelling to me about the idea of someone trying to do one thing very specifically and being undermined by a bunch of cartoons.
And you explore his biography through the course of the play in a theatrical and fantastic way to get into animation with these amazing puppets, which I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about eventually. But there's just so I want to like kind of go into that idea of his music going in a different direction than what he expected, because it seems like he didn't really care in some small way. What in your research into what was going on with Raymond Scott, like where are those turns in his life that you presented theatrically, were those conscious for the most part, or was it just kind of like he just kind of followed his whim? Because that's kind of the impression we get of this guy as we follow through it.
I think that at least the way that it works in the play is that he has this sort of singular vision of trying to communicate, as he calls it, the idealized conception of a piece of music. And what we trace over the course of the play is his attempts to get closer and closer to doing that, first by just practicing a lot, an absurd amount with the musicians in his ensemble, and then by training one particular musician, Dorothy Collins, from a young age so that she does things exactly the way he wants, and then moving into working with electronics, since he was also this brilliant electronics engineer. And so I think the idea is that it's in pursuit of this goal, and it just seemed that he was very willing and able to just kind of let stuff fall away when he was done with it. And that's sort of what we see happening here.
I think what Josh has done a great job in terms of doing with the writing is, it's tricky to get that across theatrically. There's lots of ways to do it. But I think Josh has written into the script, he's always working on something new. He's always talking about the new thing that he wants to work on. And he's such an encapsulation of that sort of post-World War II, 50s America, like believing in the future and believing in electronics and going into space and all the possibilities that America, post-atomic America, sort of offered and had. And so it makes sense to me that he would have achieved what he wanted to do and was like, I'm actually interested in something else. I'm actually interested in this electronic music. That's the future. And he ended up making money at it too. He ended up spending a lot of money creating the machines as well. But I think Josh has done a great job of like theatricalizing that with the sort of new, and what sort of traces Scott through the show is like the storyline of the animators finding his music, and then, you know, what we call Calamity Cartoons, but in real life was Warner Brothers sort of keeping his music alive while he fades more into the background.
I wanted to talk about that. You started to touch on it, Eric, but you mentioned Relentless Pursuit, Josh, and that's something of what you guys have done here in this process. I saw you've been working on this since 2009.
Yeah.
And right. This is that sense of really, I guess, just dogged pursuit of making something happen in, I guess, the way that, how to say this, the way in which we see the work on stage really reflects what I was getting as the story of Mr. Scott. So how was this 5-year development process? How did that work for you guys? Because that's a long time to keep a lot of actors working and focus on one particular project, at least in the American theater system.
That's true. I mean, it wasn't 5 years straight. We did the first version of this in the Fringe Festival in 2009, New York Fringe, and we applied in February with an idea. We were accepted in April, based on, I think, the strength of that idea and the previous show we'd done in the festival, and then we started making it. I think we worked for at least a month without Eric as Raymond being part of the project at all, and started to sort of delve into the research material that we had and work as a group. We work very collaboratively to start to figure out what the story is, and then put it all together in the, you know, over the course of the summer leading up to the festival, which was really a terrifying experience in a lot of ways, and discovered what we had sort of in front of an audience, which is also a terrifying way to make theater, and an exciting way to make theater in some respects. And
it's the only way to make theater.
and then using what we learned from the festival, it went very well. The audiences came and really liked what they saw, and we had more that we wanted to do with it. So we started to gather even more material. The family of Raymond Scott came and were very excited by the play and wanted to give us more. And so they gave us troves of letters, and I flew out to Kansas City, where the Mara Archives hold his recordings. And one of the things that's there is these extraordinary telephone recordings that he was obsessed with recording technology. And so he recorded all of his telephone calls. And so we started to get even more material and started to try to figure out how to craft that and how to make that into a play, which is a very difficult thing to do, you know, especially in a play like ours that moves so quickly and condenses things so much. We have, you know, there are pages and pages and pages of material that we never used that I wrote about the deterioration of the relationship between Dorothy, his second wife, and Raymond. And in the end, it's pretty much distilled into maybe a 5-minute scene.
But that's a great 5-minute scene.
I feel like we came out of the initial production knowing what we wanted to sort of look at and work on. We wanted to beef up his first wife, Pearl, and sort of came to the idea that in the end, maybe she was kind of the one who was like best for him, that sort of fit him best, but that like he just had a vision of something else. And we do have that built into when we travel into Raymond Scott's mind, maybe a moment or two of regret about that. And we knew we wanted to work on Dorothy Collins, and we wanted to, you know, work on inside the brain when the puppets take him inside of his brain. And there's, you know, there's probably even more stuff that we're like, wow, we would love to fit on, like another cartoon would be great to fit in. Mm-hmm. I know Johnston wants the puppets to do the surgery.
Absolutely.
On Raymond Scott.
Absolutely.
Heart surgery on Raymond Scott.
Speaking of the puppet, we need to talk puppets, because the puppets are absolutely phenomenal.
Thank
and you.
You
do excellent vocal work as well, Eric. So
what
is... I'm guessing there was what came first? I'm guessing we need to present the Looney Tunes nature of this story came first and then the puppets were brought in, or was it let's work with puppets? That'd be a great way to do the Looney Tunes thing.
I think part of the inspiration for this project was always the kind of the people that we like working with, and knowing Eric and knowing Eric's particular comedic talents and aesthetic, there was something about the idea of doing, of having Eric create whatever that would look like, a theatrical version of Looney Tunes cartoons, was really exciting for me. I think that was a crucial element to like the starting point of the show. We were like, well, part of, you know, this play could work if Eric Wright does it and is doing cartoon.
So how did you guys come up with these pieces? I mean, it's obviously inspired by the world of Warner Brothers, but what is the, I mean, Otter and Booby are certainly their own unique characters.
Yeah, that was actually really freeing to not have to do Bugs and Daffy and to not have to do the Looney Tunes characters, but to do something that had that style and that had that playfulness, you know, it opened it up and let us write new stories and make new characters and come up with something that was really our own. And in terms of how we created it, it's actually kind of like what you see on stage. I mean, we had brainstorming sessions that for the most part looked exactly like three people scribbling on a piece of paper, shouting non sequiturs at each other, and then coming up with a puppet show. And we also generated mountains of material together on puppet ideas. And
did you work alone as Puppet Kitchen and then bring it to John and the Powerhouse crew, or was it everybody together?
Yeah, the puppets were really, you know, they were really sparked by the whole ensemble. And we came up with a bunch of great cartoons, and we, you know, brainstormed ideas on what those stories might be and who these characters might be, and trying to distill the essences of Bugs and Daffy and Looney Tunes, but not, you know, and trying to get at what they were and what those characters were and how they worked, and what we could do that was interesting to us. And then, you know, we would sort of sit and mull on it a little bit and come up with some, refine the storyboards, refine the ideas, and put it to a piece of music, or, you know, creating the two cartoons, the two little tabletop cartoons that you see in the show, really helped solidify what Otter and Booby were, who they were, and what they were about. And once we knew that, I mean, there's also parts in the show that were like our process too, where the, you know, there's a point in the show where there's sort of a mock-up version of Booby. There's a point in the show where there's a paper version of, there's a paper version of Booby. Those are all things that we do, you know, as puppet designers, and that I'm very familiar with. That's just my process. It's like, I'll make a paper version, and then I'll make a rough version, and then I'll make the full color version.
And it was nice to see something of a, like a process thing going on through this that was it seemed to be a very different sort of process than what I would imagine Scott was going through, which is very much this, instead of, you know, these three guys bouncing non sequiturs off of each other, as you said, it's just trying to get what is in his head out into the world and choosing all these different, these approaches to making that happen. It's something, there's something about Scott too, and I'd love for you to speak to this, Eric, if you have any ideas about it. In the way that you present him, his focus is very singular, and he's a very unique personality. What sort of, were there any sort of research that went into finding how he himself behaved in a, like, Daniel Day-Lewis, like studying how Lincoln obviously or apparently spoke sort of thing? Or was it more taking the ideas of the Scott that Powerhouse has found and then creating the character from there?
I think that so much of what's so profound about Scott that I think we all sort of hooked in on was the particular way in which he spoke. I remember John saying something early on, like, have you heard this? Like, there's a rehearsal, a recorded rehearsal. He actually would record his rehearsals too. And there's a recorded rehearsal of Powerhouse where, like, he's speaking at like a very rapid rate, and he's saying like, well, in other words, you like John had really picked up on it. I was like, I think there's like something in that. So I do think I listened to a lot of recordings. This is not how I always work, but I listened to a lot of recordings, and I feel like Josh captured the voice very well in the script, and a lot of the stuff is taken from his actual speaking and writings, and I think that was the most helpful for me, was like understanding the way he spoke and what that said about him. He's also almost always on a microphone, like speaking into a microphone, so there's a very controlled crisp, which he liked a lot, crispness, and like the diction is very clear. So there's a very controlled manner in which he spoke, which informed for me a lot of what the character ended up being. And I think also putting him in the context of that time frame, that time of America, of like, there is nothing but endless possibilities. I feel like he's a very positive force and a positive energy, which you know, we tell some pretty sad, depressing parts of his life, but maintaining that positivity, which is something that John pushed me towards too, particularly this last time around, I was like, keep him positive here, keep him. We had moments where he got much more like harsh in the rehearsal sequences, and I think that's a big change from last time, is like he's a much more positive force. So those are the main things that shaped the character. But I really do think that like you listen to him speak and it's very engaging and interesting, and I don't usually work that way, but mastering his vocal thing ended up sort of informing everything else about him.
Something I just also watched Eric do, and I think a lot of us keyed into this, like he's a funny guy. I mean, he's intentionally humorous, but he's also unintentionally humorous, and the things that made us laugh about him were often the things that were that also gave him the greatest depth somehow.
He's very earnest in a almost naive sort of way at times.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, the thing is we never mock him on stage.
No, definitely not.
That's not part of the vocabulary of the play, but I feel like watching Eric in rehearsal, I would see you start with the things that would be amusing, and then that would often be like a way into the character. And there was a scene that was cut, but based on a real phone call that he made, in which he says the word Caracas a lot. And it was just like so clear to me that you love saying that word, and that you love the way he said that word. And that was almost the first hook into it, which I thought was really interesting.
We all ended up sort of being on the same page about like, we would read a piece of research. There was a lot of research material around, and the things that would crack us up were the things that kept on repeating. Mm-hmm. Although now some of them are gone, there was also that weird letter where he's fighting with Dorothy about the kids, and he was what did he say? He's like,
you don't have to say that.
He's like, what was the name of the babysitter?
Meredith.
He's like, listen, you hardly had her all summer or something. And
he said you had them half the summer, and I had Meredith having them half the summer.
All this felt hilarious. Like, he's trying to make a real point. Like, I was with the kids. They were with Meredith.
Right.
That's how it went.
She was like, you kept them from me. And he was like, I did not keep them from you. You had them half the summer, and I had Meredith having them half the summer.
Which we all just like, it ended up being like the thing, we were all tickled by things at the same time. But all those things were things that like, I think informed all of us about. That was one thing, you know, you look for things when you're rehearsing, when everyone's kind of getting on the same page. And that always felt like we would read some new bit of material and the same chunk of material would stick in our heads that was like so funny to us about Raymond.
This is a super entertaining and engaging and thought-provoking show. So thank you all so much for doing this. I'd love to know, like, what is there anything planned for Sinking Ship at the moment? Or is it finish Powerhouse here at the New Ohio and then see where the theatrical winds blow sort of thing? What's next for you guys?
We've been very focused on Powerhouse for a while, and this is the biggest project that we've done yet. The answer right now is that this is what we're focused on. Yeah. I think we have a couple of other ideas and a couple of other projects that have been in development, but we want to get this, we have gotten this up, and we will finish it and then move on.
Sweet.
There's also the puppet playlist that you guys do as
That's
well,
right.
Which is a an amazing evening of theater and music, which is, you, the audience ends up choosing, right, what material gets used, and then there are puppets lip syncing, or puppet shows created around
a theme.
A theme, mm-hmm. Yeah, a musical theme, whether it be Johnny Cash or...
Where can we see this?
It happens
at the Connolly Theater now.
At the Connolly Theater every 3 months. We do it 4 times a year. The next theme is going to be Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. And Eric is one of our most frequent
performers. Eric is frequently there doing incredible puppetry.
Yeah, I think really I've done...
Also, John does incredible puppetry.
Occasionally.
Yeah. You guys have been doing Puppet Playlist for 4 years? 5 years?
Six years, I think, now.
Mm. I've done 10 of them. I think.
Yeah, and the musicians, we alternate between puppets and live musicians. They're all incredible. Some really terrific music acts who show up from around town in between their amazing nationwide tours. And the puppeteers come from all over the place. We have some of the puppeteers in this show. We have people who have performed on The Muppets and on Sesame Street and Broadway and the Metropolitan Opera.
Yeah, all over the country. Puppeteers from all over come to do...
Yeah, we've had people travel to do the show.
Yeah,
actually,
it's pretty neat.
Which is cool. So the next one will, I think, be in January.
January Michael Jackson puppets. Mark your calendars now. That sounds awesome. All right, so we can get more information on Sinking Ship and Puppet Playlist. PuppetPlaylist.com and Sinking Ship is
SinkingShipProductions.com.
Yeah. All right, and you're here at the New Ohio until
The 23rd, November 23rd.
November 23rd. Great. Thanks so much, y'all, for hanging out and
Thank
doing
you.
This.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And for a killer show.
Thank you, John, Josh, Eric, and Eric, for hanging out after the show to chat. You can catch Powerhouse at the New Ohio, 154 Christopher Street in Manhattan, Tuesdays through Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. through November 23rd, 2014. Head to sinkingshipproductions.com for tickets and more information. Thanks to you for listening into the podcast. If you dig it, please give it a like on Facebook, facebook.com/GoSeeAShow. Follow at GoSeeAShow on Twitter and rate or comment on the show's iTunes page. It'd be a huge help. Until next time, go see a show.
Ah, come on with you.
We did a little bit of that.
Yeah, we did.